Thank you very much, Stan. And thank you, this church, for inviting me to speak and for this special celebration. What a privilege it is to be back in my home church and to be able to share with you what God is doing in Thailand through our partnership. I am humbled by seeing so many of you, friends and family, and I am aware that you are an essential part of my ministry. Without you, I would not be able to do what God has called me to do. I know that some of you have been praying for me faithfully every day for 25 years, and I appreciate you and your prayers. You as individuals and as a church support me and my colleagues in our ministry in Thailand with your financial gifts. I thank you for that support and for your gifts to the World Mission Offering. Your gifts have given me the opportunity to be in Thailand long enough to see the fruits of some of our work there. I have watched children grow up and accept Christ, and we even had our first child at the House of Love graduate from college this year. And your gifts have given the children at the House of Love a new home. All of us thank you for that. But more importantly, I thank you for those in Thailand who have come to know the love and salvation of Jesus Christ because of your faithfulness and your prayers. Thank you. When you pray and give, you are not only partnering with me, but with all of my colleagues in Thailand. Today, I would like to introduce you to Salo, a very important member of our team. Salo is from the Karen ethnic group and is a nurse. I have known Salo since she was 10 years old. I have seen her grow and develop, and I have worked with her for the past 8 years. She is a skilled and compassionate young woman, and I am very pleased that God has called her into ministry. I would like for her to share with you today a little of her call to ministry with children with disabilities. Salo, could you give greetings?
Swadika. Rolare, good morning. On behalf of the Karen Baptist Ban Pong Church and Masuriang Association, greetings to you in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. I give thanks to God for the opportunity to come to the United States and meet you. Also, thanks to Kim Brown, my colleague, for arranging this trip for me.
Salo has just greeted you in 3 of the 4 languages she knows. Salo, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I have one sister and one brother. My parents are both over 60 and keep busy with church programs. I grew up in a Christian family. I accept Christ for myself and was baptized when I was 12 years old.
Why did you decide to become a nurse?
My hometown is a small town on Thai-Burma border. Many of the people there are tribal, live in the remote areas, and are poor and uneducated. I wanted to help them receive medical care. I thought I could help because I was also tribal and could speak their language.
What are your responsibilities now?
I have developed a program for people with disabilities. I now manage all of the programs, activities, and personnel. We help people with disabilities in the area of health, therapy, and education. We have 18 staff, including therapists and special education teachers. The program includes a community-based project and center-based activities, such as therapy, training of vocational skills, a school preparation project, and community awareness programs. We travel into a mountain village to work with families and work with people who live in the town. At the present time, we have 160 clients.
Salo sounds pretty busy, doesn't she? But she's also an active member of the Karen Baptist Church, teaches Sunday school, and is a secretary for the leadership team of the Christian community in Masuriang. Recently, she has also just completed her master's degree in public health. So,
thank you.
What were the attitudes of families and neighbors towards children with disabilities when you began working with them?
People thought that disabilities in children were caused by the sin of their parents. This brought a lot of shame to the family, and often the children were hidden away. Families and neighbors thought that these children had no value, had no potential, and that they could not learn. They were seen as dirty and untouchable. However, some parents loved their children and took very good care of them, but this was often because they felt guilty.
How has that changed since you've been working with the children?
Parents are beginning to realize that their children have potential and that they can learn because of that some children are now attending school and are taking a part in community activities. We have also taught parents how to care for their children, and the children are cleaner, healthier, and able to do more for themselves.
How do you think that change has taken place?
Our programs were designed to involve children with disabilities in their families in community activities. We took many field trips to places such as the library and public parks. We took the children to be a part of children's day activities at the local school. We had camps. Parents began to see a difference in their children. Our activities were a means to bring children from hidden places and give them an opportunity to have social relationships with others. Opening opportunities for the children is the most important thing that we can do. In the past, they were only told their limits, not their potential.
Would you tell us what God is teaching you now as you work with the children and their families?
Jesus said in John 9, verse 3, when talking about a man born blind, neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. I am learning that for the work of God to be displayed in the lives of the children I am working with, that we as Christians must continue the work that Christ started. We must minister to the poor and the disabled and show them the love of God through our actions and attitudes. We must be good example. Our lives must be different from others. This will cause those who are not Christians to look at how we are different and see God in what we do.
I know that the work is difficult. What keeps you encouraged?
I always say to myself, do not look back to yesterday. Each day brings new grace. As you obey God's call, you will find God's joy and grace. I believe that the Lord is my shepherd. As in Psalm 23, verse 4, I am also able to say, I will fear no harm, for you are with me.
What is God calling you to do in the future?
I am not sure, but I want to follow God's plan. We can see in Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, that it says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. I know that is God's plan, so no matter what God has planned for me, I will trust Him. I thank you for your support for our work and ask that you pray for our staff and all of the children and the families that we serve. Thank you.
Thank you, Salo, and what a privilege it is to work with her. God has given me a special colleague in Salo. Thank you. It was 25 years ago in this very sanctuary that you sent me out, and yet I still remember the fear I felt when I first heard God calling me to serve in another country. As I struggled with that call, I was reminded of Joshua 1:9, where God says, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. My experiences in Thailand have not all been easy. They have taught me that Jesus sends us out into a troubled and dark world, but these same experiences have confirmed that Jesus does not send us out alone. Jesus keeps his promise to be with us. In the midst of the troubles we face, God stands with us. Christ makes his presence known in very personal ways. As you know, I work with children in Thailand, children with disabilities, children in poverty, living in poverty in urban slums, children who have been abused, and children who are affected or infected by HIV/AIDS. Many of the children that I work with have watched their mothers and fathers die of AIDS. Some have also watched their brothers and sisters and best friends die. Others have lived on the streets begging or stealing or running drugs for their parents, selling flowers and dancing in karaoke bars as a means to survive. Often the children come to us withdrawn, full of trauma, grief, and fear. Seeing the children in this condition can be very difficult, but I believe the children have a special place in the heart of Jesus. Jesus instructed his disciples to allow the children to come to him. He reached out and touched them. He listened to them. He recognized and spoke about their faith. He took time to see a young boy who brought a gift of bread and fish and accepted that gift and used it to feed thousands. He brought a young girl back from death. Jesus knows that children are vulnerable and that they need protection and love. And yet children, in fact, an estimated 300 million children worldwide are subjected to violence, exploitation, and abuse. This comes in all forms and includes trafficking, labor exploitation, domestic servitude, physical and emotional abuse, sexual exploitation and pornography, denial of basic human rights, and neglect. These children are often bound by their circumstances, captive to the adults who use them, held back by fear and hopelessness, and knowledge that they are unwanted and unloved. These children are at risk of becoming invisible and forgotten. I believe that Christ has shed tears over our treatment of children. Christ has seen their tears and has heard their cries. No one is ever invisible to Christ. No one is ever forgotten by Christ, not even the smallest child. Christ can heal and redeem their deepest pain. But Christ often chooses to bring about that healing by allowing his love to be experienced through ordinary people, people like you and me. I am reminded of these things as I watch the changes in Suti. Suti, a child living at the House of Love, was brought to us because no one else wanted him. His mother and father had died of AIDS. He lived with his grandmother, who was an alcoholic. She did not want to care for Suti. He was a burden, and caring for him would only interfere with her drinking. She became angry and violent when she was drunk and would take her anger out on Suti. He had the scars to prove it. Other villagers did not want Suti around. He was HIV positive and thought to be deaf and severely impaired intellectually, unable to learn. He did not talk. Everyone in the village teased him. Suti had been abused in other ways. He let us know that by acting out his abuse, usually through hurting another child. He would not look at us. He did not try to communicate with us. And it was obvious that no one had ever tried to communicate with him. Not ever. Suti did watch the other children when he thought no one would notice. He watched to make sure that they would not hurt him. Suti was a very angry child. His eyes were full of fear. He trusted no one. Suti, at the age of 8, had never been to school, did not know how to hold a pencil or how to kick a ball. What Suti did know was that no one cared about him, that no one wanted him. Suti, however, experienced the love of Jesus through the house parents and the other children and the student intern at the House of Love. The house parents tried to communicate with him. The children invited him to join their games. The student intern sat with him and showed him that she was interested and concerned. Simple things, but Suti slowly began to trust, slowly began to feel a part of the House of Love family. Suti has been at the House of Love for over 3 years now. He has learned quickly. He is very interested in his environment and wants to know about all the things that he is noticing for the very first time. He wants to sing and write and draw pictures. He wants contact with those around him and runs to greet people he knows. He has learned to communicate, to laugh, and to play. He looks for ways to help others. He has a sense of humor. He is going to school every day, and although that is not his favorite thing to do, he is very proud of his achievements. He still watches the other children, but it is not out of fear. He watches because he wants to learn appropriate behavior and fit in with the others. He's been accepted by the other children and feels at home with us. Suti still has difficulties to overcome and needs our prayers, but God has begun his miraculous work of healing in the life of Suti. I have also seen God at work in the life of Ajay. I met Ajay and his sister Mui when Ajay was 8 and Mui was only 2. They lived in an urban slum and their mother was dying of an AIDS-related illness. Mui was also sick and HIV positive. There was an older brother who was 11, but beyond that, the children did not know any other relative. Ali, the older brother, would stay at home to care for his mother and sister while Ajay went to school. The children all knew that if Ajay went to school, he would receive a free school lunch. Ajay would not eat that lunch, but he would bring it home so that his family of four could share that one meal at the end of the day. When there was no school, there was often no food. The children were frightened, not knowing what they would do when their mother died. Their mother refused to go to the hospital because she did not want to leave her children alone, and so she became sicker and sicker. The House of Love staff began to visit Ajay's family. They visited every day and brought food and gained the family's trust. They were able to convince the mother to go to the hospital after she agreed to allow us to care for her children. Ajay's mother has died, but the children have been able to stay together. Ali has graduated from high school and is married, expecting his first child. And Ajay has just entered college and is studying to be an architect. His faith is growing as he continues to care for his younger sister. Mui is in the sixth grade and is doing well on antiretroviral medication. The children know now that they have a family and a home. God has worked through his people to give a hope and a future to Ajay. Prapan's story is more difficult. Prapan was a healthy young boy until one morning he woke with a high fever and extreme pain and swelling in his joints. It hurt to move and it hurt to walk, and so he went to bed. He was only 9 years old and was very frightened. His mother tried to care for him, but he refused to let her do so because of the pain. Prapan's father had left the village, and his mother was left alone to work the fields so that she and Prapan would have food to eat. She was not well, and she had so little time at home. When Salo first met Prapan, he had not been outside of his home for over 4 years. He had not stood up for a year. He had not let his mother bathe him for much of that time, and he had almost stopped eating. He had become thin and weak, and his muscles had wasted away. His mother did not know what to do. She cried over her son's condition, but she had no hope. Her fear that her son's condition might be the punishment of evil spirits for something she had done left her feeling helpless. And she was all alone. No one dared help her and thereby run the risk of that the spirits would become angry with them also. Salo visited many times, talking to Prapan and his mother, slowly building trust, letting them know that she cared. It was not until the seventh visit that Prapan agreed to be carried outside onto his porch, where he allowed the therapist to bathe him, cut his long fingernails, and shampoo and cut his hair. He had not let his mother do these simple hygiene tasks for many months, but once he had given permission to start, his mother very quickly joined in and lovingly and tenderly washed her son's very frail body. Prapan and his mother began to smile. The following week, Salo returned and Prapan was given a new wheelchair, warm blankets, and new clothes. For the first time in 4 years, he was able to interact with the other villagers as he sat out on the porch. Prapan and his mother were later able to come down to the center for more therapy and training in nutrition and health. He worked with the therapist, the nurse, and special education teachers. It was difficult work for Prapan, but he worked with all the energy he had and a smile for all that he met. On his last day at the center, he was able to attend the center's Christmas party, and he and his mother heard the Christmas story for the first time. The transformation taking place in this courageous young boy was an example of God's grace and kindness working through Salo and her team. However, the story does not end here. Earlier this year, Prapan contracted a viral infection. He was still too weak to fight the infection, and so he died. Just when he was beginning to feel better and to smile again, he died. Sometimes it is difficult to understand why things happen. But it was Prapan's mother herself who saw God at work in the circumstances, redeeming some of her pain. Even in her grief, Prapan's mother was thankful that she was able to care for her child again, to build a relationship with him before he died. She is thankful to Salo and her team, the only people who would travel up the mountain to seek her out and continue to visit her until her son was willing to accept help. She is thankful that she was not left alone to watch her son slowly die, hopeless, with no way to help him. She has told her neighbors and the government officials about these people, these Christians who demonstrate a different kind of concern, a different kind of care. In my 25 years of Thailand, I have seen God at work, even in the difficult times. I have seen God's love change lives. I have seen God's love bring hope. And I have seen how often God uses people just like you and me to make his love known to others. This is my experience. I have had the privilege of seeing God at work, changing lives in miraculous ways. But the other day, as I was sharing these stories, a young woman asked me, "How do you keep your faith? Don't you ever wonder why God lets such things happen?" And my response to her was, "I do sometimes wonder why, but I also know that God was at work in each of these situations. Perhaps the question we should be asking is, where are the people of God? Why do the people of God let such things happen?" And that is my challenge to you today. Why do such things happen? What are you willing to do to show God's love to those who are hurting in your neighborhood, in your country, and in distant places around the world? I believe that as a people of God, we need to be informed. We need to know about the issues and the people that God is concerned about in our world today. I believe that we need to be involved, that we need to be in prayer, and that we need to give of our time and finances, and that we need to influence others to be a part of God's work. I believe that we as a people of God need to act out of compassion, with a purpose, and with hope. If we look at the example of Jesus, we see that Christ had a great compassion and a passion for the whole world. When was the last time that you had compassion for the world? Where's the heart of Christ today, and is your heart there with his? We can act with purpose. Ephesians 2:10 says, "We are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do." That is your purpose, to do good works. Are you as a church intentional about seeking what good works God has prepared for you to do? And we can act with hope. Gary Hagen, the founder of International Justice Ministry, says that in the face of overwhelming evil and injustice, we often feel powerless, and that powerlessness paralyzes us and takes away our hope. We wonder if we can really make a difference. But when we ask that question, we underestimate God. We underestimate the value of what God has given us to transform the lives of others. We underestimate the value of helping just one person. And we underestimate God's determination to work through us to share his love to the world. Friends, do not estimate the gifts that God has given you. Do not underestimate what God wants to do through you. God's call may take you to dark and difficult places, but I have learned that there is no place too dark that God is not already there. He is there ministering to those in need. He is there waiting for his people, that is you and me, to come and minister beside him. Christ has called us to make his love visible and available in a broken world. My prayer is that we do that in such a way that no one will ever again have to doubt the very existence of God and his love, but that they will know God's love because they have experienced it through us. Thank you.